Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Sarah.
I'm Liz.
And this is the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast. Okay.
Welcome to episode 16, to episode 16 of the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast. We are joined today by Cameron Rogers, known on Instagram as @freckledfoodie. So you can be sure to follow her and we'll give you her background.
Yeah,
we're really excited to talk to you.
I'm so excited to be here. It's so cozy on a Sunday night.
Yeah, I know, it's great.
When you don't have a studio, you just have to kind of...
I did it, and I had an episode with someone who has a show called like Cooking Scrappy, and he came over and I was like putting books under the thing to hold the mic up, and he's like, it's scrappy, it's perfect.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Okay. Yeah, so we're glad to work with people who are cognizant of the podcasting space.
Of course. We should have been in PJs.
Yeah, would have been.
Yeah. I should have gone like matching onesies for all of us.
True.
Yes.
Would have been a great shot. Okay, so we're obviously going to start with Peak and Pit. So Cameron, do you want to start us off?
Of course. I have two peaks. Is that okay?
Oh, yes.
Of
course. But I do advise that you start with Pit so that you can end on a happy note.
Let's go for it.
Okay.
My Pit is that this week, which is ironic because we're recording this episode on this topic, I've been a bit anxious this week, just feeling a little unmotivated with my work. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, what am I doing? What's next? How the hell am I going to make any of this work? Imposter syndrome situation.
Yes. We know all about
it. And it's been really, really, really heavy this week. So that's my pit.
Okay.
And my peak one is that my puppy and I had like an hour long nap on my couch today.
Oh.
And it was, I mean, brought tears to my eyes. I wish I was joking. And the other one is that I took the time yesterday to have a very vulnerable and emotional but like serious and much needed conversation with someone very important in my life who we had just been kind of feeling off and off kilter. And, you know, when you just let those emotions fester and then it just kind of builds.
Totally. And it becomes toxic.
Yeah. We sat down and really like laid it all out there.
Good.
To hopefully move forward in a better way.
Wow. Those are tough.
Yeah.
But worth it.
So worth it. Oh my gosh. So worth it.
That's awesome.
But really difficult to have.
Yeah.
Well, good for you for having that conversation.
Thanks. Yeah. It was great.
Do you want to take
it away? So, yeah, sure. My pit of the week was that I thought someone was mad at me, but my peak was that the person wasn't.
Amazing. I love those simple ones. And also mine is like kind of a dual one too. My pit is that it's like gotten really cold and it's hard to be outside. Mm-hmm. And that can just like contribute so negatively to mental health in general.
Yeah.
And like, not to mention, we already talked about how like the sun goes down earlier and that's tough. Mm-hmm. But the peak at the same time is like kind of like the camaraderie of the cold. Like people spend a lot more time together indoors and there's just kind of a sense of like, we know it's cold and we're all like sad about it. But I like that it kind of brings out the conversation more about like, oh, it sucks. But like, there's sort of like a shared...
Yeah, you do something about it.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's really cool. And so, yeah, we're excited that you're here. And I'm curious about like how we're going to structure the episode because I'll start with this.
Yeah,
the way Liz was introduced to Cameron was through this platform that you created on your blog recently called Share Your Story. And you reached out to, I think, people with like a platform who have already spoken about anxiety, mental health. Mm-hmm. And I think someone recommended.
Yeah, I had like one of those questions in my Instagram stories. Like, who do you guys follow that talks openly about mental health, anxiety, all that?
Right.
And then everyone that was submitted, I reached out to and emailed.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, your relationship with mental health and how you got, you know, your personal relationship with mental health and then like how you wanted to start sharing other people's?
Of course. So for me, I mean, I'll try to keep like a long story short for this period of the story. And I do have an episode that's me sitting on a mic alone explaining my in-depth relationship with anxiety for like an hour.
Gotcha.
I always grew up anxious without realizing I was anxious. I think that I vividly have memories of, and I'm sorry, just like trigger warning, I've had people say that they also get anxious by this and sometimes when I talk about it, it makes them anxious.
Okay.
It's this like fear of time never ending. So it's not death. it's like what happens after we die. Like time doesn't end. Like what's next? Mm-hmm. And I remember being a kid, probably like 11, 12, 13, having this conversation with my cousin and being like, we have to stop talking about this. I feel like I'm going to throw up. I feel like I'm going to throw up. And every time that conversation, I don't know why it was coming up so often, I kept saying, I think I'm going to puke. But it was really just the anxiety like bubbling within me. And I had no idea what that was. And then my anxiety honestly manifested in like being really, it sounds so annoying, but being a type A, like competitive, always getting stuff done. And so I got accolades and I was rewarded for my basically anxiety. Yeah. Like with sports, I was always putting in all the effort. I was doing my best. I was showing up to everything on time. I was like the person, if you told someone to do something, I did it right away. And it was the same with school. Once I graduated from high school, I didn't really care. But college, I really cared about my grades and I'm very hard on myself. And it was one of those like, oh, I did so well the first semester. I can't not do this well again, mm-hmm. which was like a 3.9, which is mm-hmm. just not realistic to right. set that bar. Right. And so it just became that. And then when I started working, I don't think I noticed that my level baseline of anxiety was so high. I was working in sales and trading at JP Morgan, and you know, it's a very fast paced, high intensity environment. Yeah. And I was rewarded for this type of behavior because it led to me being successful at my job. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of encouraged this anxiety in a way. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I really like took a step back and noticed that I always felt on edge. I was like clenching my fists all the time. My shoulders were like raised up at my neck. I always felt like there was a chance I was going to like throw up out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And I think I really struggled graduating from college, starting the real world, and then working in the real world for the first few years. I like would have random emotional breakdowns and start hysterically crying. And that's not something that I was ever prone to mm-hmm. or experienced. So I started to really like take note of it, pay attention to it, figure out what was going on and what I could do to help it. And then I started Freckled Foodie. And I don't know if this is kind of also going to answer another question, but totally. I started Freckled Foodie on the side as a fun way to just like share my food that I was making. I still don't understand what led me to start it. It was basically my friends like, stop fucking sending me. Am I allowed to curse?
Yeah.
Go okay. for it.
Stop fucking sending me photos of your food. Like put it somewhere and I'll look at it if I want, but like I don't need to be inundated with text messages of it. And it was a total hobby, like creative outlet I didn't know I needed from this finance world. And I never thought more of it. That's just what it was. I never showed my face on my page. I never talked about myself. It was strictly recipes and that was that. And I kept my two worlds very separate. Mm-hmm. I then started to fall more in love with it and less in love with my job. Mm-hmm. And I think that caused a lot of anxiety of like, well, what does this mean? What am I supposed to do now? How could this ever become a job? You know, there's like a large part of my role in finance was egotistical. I made great money. It mm-hmm. was a badge of honor to say I worked there. I wasn't willing to give it up. And then I eventually quit and we can get into that later. But, you know, my anxiety definitely heightened when I became my own boss because I think it's painted out to be like sunshine and daisies and you make your own hours. You can do whatever you want. It's so magical. You're not working for the man. But when you're someone that's really hard on yourself, it's like the boss is always watching. And so there's that level of like, I always can be doing more or what should I be doing? So it's hard to turn off mm-hmm. and just the pressure of being responsible for everything. And so my anxiety definitely increased a lot over this time. There was a lot of health stuff going on for me and health is a big anxiety trigger, especially after an incident that happened last year. And so it was a mix of that. And the reason that I wanted to share my story personally is I just am an open book. Mm-hmm. I really will talk about anything. And I just started talking about what I was going through on my Instagram. And I kept getting all these messages of like, I am so grateful to hear someone is going through this because I thought I was so alone.
Yeah.
And like, thank you so much for sharing. I feel the same way. I didn't know other people felt that way. So for me, it was a validating of like, oh, I'm not alone. And it was also wild to me that all these people were saying they felt they were the only person mm-hmm. and I was getting hundreds of the same DMs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So obviously we're all feeling the same thing. Mm-hmm. And that's what led me to kind of, it was a total random thought to start this platform. And it's very new, the Share Your Story on my website, really just to provide a space for people to share their story, because I do think it's therapeutic to write it all out. And if you don't have a platform, you're not really faced with that opportunity often. Mm-hmm. And I wanted people to be able to read other people's stories and be like, oh, I'm not alone in these things. Like, I thought I was the only one that thought that crazy thing, but mm-hmm. nope, everyone does. So we just launched it. You know, I would love for more submissions. I know it's asking a lot for people, so yeah. we'll see where it goes. It's mm-hmm. not, it's not like my, you know, end all be all. I need this to work for my career. It's really just, I want to provide a space for people. I'm not getting anything out of this for my company other than helping others, which mm-hmm. is what I want to do.
Yeah, totally. That's great.
That was so long.
No, I mean, it's a yeah, great story. I want to hear more. It's interesting because I had never heard of that type of anxiety you talked about, which you said, like, I have to be careful when I talk yeah. about it because there are people who experience this. And that to me is like not an anxiety that I have. But I do often feel like these random worries that I have. It's like there's no way that anyone else feels mm-hmm. this worry. Like, it doesn't make any sense. So yes, how could anyone feel
crazy.
That way?
It's really, and I try not to use the word crazy, but it's so interesting
yeah.
because, you know, you have these very what you find to be personal and only specific to your life. Mm-hmm. thoughts, and then when you actually, and I think they're always worsened when you don't say them out loud. You yes. know, when I'm really anxious about things, I say to Joe, I'm feeling so anxious because, and not because I don't really always know, but I'm saying, like, this is what I'm fearing, and I just lay it all out on the table, and I'm like, oh.
Once you say it out loud, yeah. it really helps you. It's as if you're having a conversation with yourself. Like, do I need to be
yes.
this anxious about this?
And is that yeah. actually ever going to happen? My therapist is always like, you know, what evidence and statistics do you have that the voice inside your head is right? Because
yeah.
every worst case scenario you've ever painted out has not happened.
Right. Same. In therapy, my therapist is always like talking about the stories that I create for myself. Mm-hmm. And like, she's just like, I want you to... Like what my therapist has started having mm-hmm. me try to do is like write down other alternatives.
Yeah.
So like if I'm, because I convince myself that mm-hmm. the story I have in my head is the one that's going to happen.
Yeah. And like that's it. There's no other way.
Yeah. I'm like, in my head, it's so logical. I'm like, of course, that happened. So now the next logical step is that I'm getting fired.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? And she's like, I just need you to write down, like physically write down alternatives mm-hmm. and not just think them, but actually put them out. Because mm-hmm. once you start to think about other alternatives, you're like, okay, maybe this like worst case scenario isn't the only option. Yes.
And I think writing things down in general has been so helpful for me. Mm-hmm. I did for a long time. It was, I guess you could call it morning journaling. There wasn't any specific like path that I was taking. It was really a brain dump. I just wrote every single thing I was thinking, and it didn't even have to make sense. It could be different words. It was just, don't stop moving your pen. Wow. The first thing you do when you wake up. And it just got rid of all of like the gunk that was that top level layer mm-hmm. of shit I was worrying about that didn't need to be a part of my brain space. And then once I released that, I was able to like go about my day. And I do think it's really helpful.
Yeah.
I need to start doing that.
Yeah.
For sure.
And it's so funny what you start writing. You like, it's things that you're not even thinking about. It's like, where is this coming from?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like your brain's still in your subconscious from exactly. sleep, sort of.
It's like kind of like dream journaling.
Uh-huh.
Which I also have done. And like that it then builds the behavior of you remembering your dreams more vividly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a very vivid dreamer. So I'm always like, very curious what the hell is going on.
Totally. Oh. I actually remember a couple days ago someone asked you, how do you deal with panic attacks on the subway? And you said, yeah. I think this isn't something I experienced.
Exactly.
But...
So like that's it. Sorry, I totally cut you off.
No, that's okay. I was just, I love that you kind of talk about like evidence-based therapy mm-hmm. because you describe that you're a type A person. And so you're the kind of person that like needs to see the statistics, yes. the statistics and the evidence. And I think your answer was something like, think of all the subway rides that you've taken
exactly.
that have been totally fine.
Yeah.
And I really like that. I thought it just was a great way to resonate with someone who might otherwise think that anxiety makes no sense. It's like, well, mm-hmm. look at all the evidence in front of you. Maybe this can kind of help you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's another example of how we were talking, you know, you don't feel triggered by what I'm saying. And
right.
I get a lot of messages when I'm flying, you know, because I talk about anxiety, people are like, oh my gosh, how do you fly? Are you okay? And I'm like, I don't think twice about a flight.
Mm-hmm.
I get up, I'm fine. I don't get nervous the night before. I get on the plane, I do my thing, I pass out in 2 seconds. Like mm-hmm. subway, that none of that gives me anxiety, but I know it's very triggering for other people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're all different. And I think that, I mean, I preach that on every level of the health spectrum, that we're all different, and bioindividuality, and you have to figure out what works for you. But you know, no matter what your triggers are, there is hopefully evidence that most of the time your worst fear is not coming true.
Yeah.
And obviously, unfortunately, there are times where worst fears do come true.
Of course.
But, you know, I would say the evidence is usually on your side.
Right.
So you touched a little bit on how you went from JP Morgan.
Yeah.
To, I was going to ask.
To like being an entrepreneur. And we talk about this a lot because we're both sort of like we're in corporate environments and we have a lot of listeners who are either in corporate environments and trying to transition or they're people who are entrepreneurs and how they deal with like the anxiety of maybe wanting to transition or being an entrepreneur and being like, I'm still anxious. Like, I don't know, really know what to do. God. So
the anxiety doesn't go away when you become your own boss, let me tell you.
Right. So can you kind of walk us through like your time at JP Morgan much as you can, why you decided to leave, what factors, and then like how life has changed for you since
and
then.
How, and just to add on to that, but like how, because you said earlier that you weren't sure how Freckled Foodie would ever become a career.
Yeah,
I'd love to know like how you eventually,
Yeah, I really wish there was some secret sauce, like.
Same, so that I could take
God.
It.
Oh my God, totally. Like every, it's, I get asked that a lot and you know I asked people before I did it. So basically like taking it way back, when I was in high school, or when I was in college, I had no idea what I wanted to do post-college. I was an econ major, finance minor, and psych minor. And honestly, that was just because like numbers made more sense to me than writing things down. I don't want to say English, but I guess that's the case. And
that's like what the subject was called.
Right?
Yeah,
right? English.
Yeah.
And both my parents were in finance. And so it was just like, yeah, sure, why not? And then when I started to think about what do I want to do after college, so like sophomore year, I really wanted to be in sports broadcasting. And it's funny now that I've come kind of full circle. I think that maybe a part of it has come true. I'm like, okay, I have a mic. I'm kind of on camera.
Totally.
I have a community and an audience. But that's what I wanted to do. So I applied to like ESPN, Fox, CBS, NBC, like every sports broadcasting program. And I remember actually sitting in, which you probably know, Teresa's in Princeton.
Yes,
and I was with my mom. So good. I was with my mom and she was like, you know, you kind of have to get a real summer job. Like you can't just coach lacrosse anymore. Like you're going to have to eventually get a job post college. So you should look at real internships. So I told her I wanted to apply to those places. And she said, you know, she was in investment banking and my dad's in the, well, was in the credit card industry. And so she obviously knew of sales and trading from her time in IB and said, I think it would be perfect for you. And, you know, it's very catered towards athletes. I just want you to apply. Why not try? So I was like, sure, I'll apply. If I'm going to apply, I'll apply to the top one and I can just say I did it.
Right.
So I applied to JP Morgan and it just became like they had, within 2 weeks, I had an interview, then I had another interview, then another. And before I even heard back from any of the like broadcasting media, I had an internship offer. So I accepted at JP, I interned, loved it, came back for a second internship, loved it, got a full-time offer. And so I started a month after I graduated from college. So I hate to say this because it's such an incredible and like, you know, sought after role, but it kind of just happened without me noticing because it was like, yeah, of course I'll take another internship. Right. That would be silly not to do this. And of course I'll work here full-time. I can go into senior year with a job, like sign me up.
Right.
And I really did love it. And so the first few years, it was the most exciting times. And I really felt like I was the only person in my group of friends that loved their job. But I worked my fucking ass off.
Totally.
There's no doubt about it. Like there were times where I felt really isolated because, you know, the years right after you graduate from college, everyone's going out. And every Wednesday night is like Turtle Bay dollar beers. Yeah. Thursday, you're at Brojay's. And, you know, I always had to leave at like 11 or midnight because I was getting up at 5 to get to the desk by 6. And a lot of my friends were in jobs where they could be like, call in hungover. And that just didn't exist in my world.
Right.
So I did constantly feel like I was being, not purposefully, but left out because I was leaving.
Right.
So, you know, the first 2-3 years, I am in love, loving it, great. But I'm also kind of feeling this. Well, I was going through digestive health issues.
Okay.
So that just led me to go on all these elimination diets. I was so frustrated. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a whole different topic, but it was just getting really bad. And there, it got to a point where I couldn't really breathe. And so I saw gastro. We went on all these elimination diets and it just became so frustrating because I...
Sorry to interrupt you. Sorry, go. You couldn't breathe because you were anxious about it or because the
bloat
physical...
was the physical bloat was so bad. It was like affecting my windpipes.
Okay. Got it.
Wow.
But it was also making me really anxious.
Of course.
And, you know, this is a huge part of my anxiety journey as well because I was cutting out all these foods and there became such anxiety over the act of dining out and like, you know, team dinners or group dinners or like even going to the Dig In because I had to ask about every single ingredient. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a lot of the wait staff at these like fast casual places in Midtown are like, fuck off. There's a line of 100 people right. behind you. I don't have time for this.
Totally.
And it just became it was a bad mental place for me. It was just really difficult. I was so anxious and emotional and just over it all. And at that time is when I started cooking because I just couldn't deal with the conversations anymore. Mm-hmm. So I start cooking and then, like I kind of said, I start this Instagram totally just, this will be fun. You know, I actually did it. My sister and I came up with the idea of Freckled Foodie. She was younger.
How? Because you have freckles?
Yeah. That's cute. And she still is a little bitter about this. I started on my own. Without her, drunk one night after her birthday party.
Like she wanted to do it together.
Yeah, but she was like still in college. And I tell her this all the time. I tell her the second I have a salary to pay her, she's coming onto my team. But I she was in college. It just wasn't going to be a thing that, you know, it was just a different world. So whatever, I start this account. And it was also, I thought like maybe I was going to be able to eat for free in New York. Because I was like, this is so expensive. Totally. That didn't happen. It still doesn't really happen. And so I started this on the side. I didn't tell anyone because I was so embarrassed about it. I was like, another food account. I only told my boyfriend, now husband. 3 months later, like my one friend is the best Instagram social stalker ever. Like if any boy is ever in a situation where you need to know what is up with his life, she can like get to the bottom of it.
Wow.
She found Freckled Foodie without me ever saying anything. And she texts me and she's like, excuse me, is this you? I was like, how the hell did you find this? So then I started to tell everyone. And, you know, then it just became, it honestly just spiraled. I just became infatuated with it. I became infatuated with cooking. It was all I could think about. I just wanted to try new things and new recipes. And, you know, I just was in love. It was a creative outlet I never knew I needed. And, you know, sales and trading can be so exciting because it's so market dependent, but it can also be mundane in the fact that you're doing the same thing every day, just depending on the change of the market. And I love structure, so it was great for that. But I kind of just became a little robotic. And I also then just, you know, with Freckled Foodie, I started meal prepping for myself and my husband. And then my friends were like, this isn't fair that Joe gets food meal prepped. And I was like, oh, I'll do it for you too. So I started meal prepping for all my friends on the weekends. Like, it was crazy when I think about what I was doing. Absolutely lunatic.
And yeah, so, you had like a really full-time job and you were like prepping food for people too.
Yes. Okay. So I was getting up at 4 a.m. to like think about like what I was going to do, make some stuff, go to the gym, go to work, come home by 6, cook all night, like make recipes.
Oh my gosh.
And then Saturday, like first thing in the morning, I would go to Trader Joe's with a full list I already had, get all the ingredients to prep for everyone, cook all like day
people
Saturday.
People would just pay you and you would just...
Oh, my friends were just paying for the grocery. So I wasn't making any money off of this.
Oh my God. That's a lot of time and effort.
Yes. Yes.
Like you deserve to get paid for all of that.
Oh, duh. Yeah. I eventually did from other people.
You're like, wait, I shouldn't do this for free anymore.
And then I was also like at the beach. I just was like, I want people to know that healthy breakfast can be delicious and there aren't many options at our shore town. And so I was just making like smoothies and yogurt parfaits and overnight oats and putting them in coolers in the back of my dad's Jeep. And I parked on the main like street that everyone walks in the morning. And I was like, free breakfast. Who wants it? I'm Freckled Foodie. And it was now I look back like, what was I doing? But I loved it. It excited me.
Totally.
And so I honestly just kept following things that excited me with no plan of ever making this full time. And I did feel that every time I opened a door, there were 10 doors behind it and I did not have time to open up any more of them. And I felt like there was so much to be done, but I was totally at my absolute cap and there was no more of me to give to anything. So I kind of sat down with this all, and at this exact time I also got engaged, and so I had kind of considered like, should I quit, should I try to do this? And Joe, my husband, was like, you know what, the wedding is going to be a lot. Let's just stay at JP Morgan. You know, you can, you have a great job. You have, you don't have to like stress about it. You're good at it. You can worry about the wedding and deal with it. And then we can reassess. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Okay.
Smart man.
Yes. I didn't follow his advice. So
just kidding. Dumb man.
Yeah. So I was like, yep, I'll stay. And I kind of honestly came to the conclusion, and this is something I really deal with now. It's a personal situation I have to go through, but money holds a lot of weight for me. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of that egotistical aspect of like, well, what am I going to tell people I do? How the fuck am I going to make money? I don't want to change my lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I'm a very privileged person and I live a great life and I didn't want to change it. And I just couldn't fathom the idea of like not knowing, and this is totally egotistical of me and I get that, but not making the money I did. I'm like, of course. I looked down on myself.
Especially because you were already at JP Morgan making a salary exactly. that you liked.
So and yeah, I had yeah.
go down from that.
Yeah. And I had really high expectations right. that right. I have not met. And so then I had kind of accepted like this is just going to be a side thing. Mm-hmm. I can't really do anything with this. At the time, there was nowhere near doing like sponsored content on my page at all. I didn't like I think I had maybe like 3,000 followers. So I was like amazed that I even had 3,000, but I also was like, this will never grow. And so then I had kind of set on that, and everyone was like, are you the most anxious person in the world? You're planning a wedding, you're doing all this crazy shit on the side, and you're working a very stressful job. Mm-hmm. And I was constantly, it's weird, but I do vividly remember saying to many people, I feel like I'm running with a blindfold on, and I know I'm going to hit a wall at some point. I just don't know when, and I don't see it. And then I actually got hit by a car. So that like changed everything. So in March, and this is what led me to quit. Yeah. I'm fine. Like I'm saying it to you, obviously I'm fine because right, you see right, me, right. but for people listening.
No, but it's actually funny that you say that because the person that we interviewed today for another episode was hit by a car.
Was hit by a car and he ran the New York Marathon. Up. Yeah. The oh episode's going to come out before yours, but it's that's just like a bizarre full circle moment.
It's just weird, yeah.
Oh my
yeah.
God. Okay, well, I'll definitely have to listen to that one. So cool. It was the first weekend of March and I was...
2019.
No, 2018.
Oh, okay.
So a year and a half ago.
Got it.
And I'm, or like almost 2 years ago. I'm walking to a yoga class. It's like, I never go to yoga after work, especially it was a Friday night, but it was the first opening day at a studio that my friend teaching at, Sky Ting in Domino.
I teach at Core Power.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I love it there.
Oh, great.
And I was walking there in the snow in Brooklyn and it was like a horrible snowstorm and every part of me didn't want to go, but I was like, you know what? It'll be worth it. Whatever. And I'm a block away and mom, if you're listening, I'm sorry. She hates when I tell the story, but like I had the walk sign. I had my hood up. I had headphones in. I looked both ways, not on my phone. I have the walk. I start to walk and a car that had like the parallel street from me has a green light and comes driving down pretty quickly, which would have been fine if he had kept going straight, but he went to turn left. And just didn't stop to see if there was a pedestrian. So he hit the side of my body. And
God.
You know, I basically, moral of the story is that I had a really bad concussion. And I've had a handful before. And this one just like absolutely rocked me. And so I was on disability from JP Morgan for 2 months. And during this time, you know, I had insanely awful headaches and migraines and really bad concussion symptoms. And there's nothing you can do. Like you can't read, you can't be on your phone, you can't be on technology. So I couldn't even, I think there's kind of a misunderstanding I've heard people say to me like, oh, well, that's so nice you had disability to like get Freckled Foodie starting. And I was like, no.
Right.
Like I couldn't do anything. Mm-hmm. I wasn't on my phone. Siri knew every aspect of my life because she did all my texting would like read it back to me. So all you could do is journal and talk to people, and I'm very fortunate my mom came in a lot. One of my closest friends happened to be in between two jobs, so she was there a lot, and I began my meditation practice, and it honestly just became, and it's the best way I can explain it, it became less of should I do this, I don't know, this would be so crazy, how would I even make this happen, to I have to do this, there's no question, I'm quitting my job.
Wow.
And so I sat down and I looked, and I think this is very important that people overlook, but I sat down at my financials and I assessed, do I have money saved to not potentially make money for a bit? And I always saved 99% of my bonus at JP Morgan. I didn't know what for. Now I do. Mm. But you know, I sat down and I looked, if I don't make any money in 6 months, like, how long can I go? And so I gave myself 6 months of not making any money. And I gave myself, which people say is crazy short, and I kind of agree looking back. And I gave myself X amount of money to invest in myself. Luckily, there's no overhead. And so I kind of sat down and thought out, what can I do with this to make money right now? What do I want to do? And I put together this kind of like media kit of who I am and my services I was offering of, you know, meal prepping, health coaching services, grocery store walkthroughs, kitchen audits. And I put it all together and I sent it to everyone I know and was like, hey, whether I know you and I see you every day or I haven't seen you in years, I just quit my job and this is what I want to do. Can you send this to everyone you know? Here is a draft email written for you already, speaking about myself in the third person. So all you have to do is hit forward. And from there, I just kind of like spiderwebbed and I started meal prepping for people. And, you know, once I realized I didn't actually talk about quitting my job. So I did go to work after disability. Uh-huh. I worked for a full week and then I sat my boss down that next week and was like, you know what? It's nothing with you. It's nothing with the team. I've really loved my experience here, but my life has changed and I have to pursue this. And I would hate myself if I didn't. The corporate world, you know, is not going anywhere. And I mm-hmm. realize what privilege I have to be able to say this. Like, I always want to make that very clear. I'm not telling everyone to just up and quit their jobs.
Right.
You have to be in a place that allows you to take, you know, taking risks is a privilege. And I mm-hmm. think that's overlooked.
Yes.
And so I left and I was meal prepping and I meal prepped for 6 months and I started to notice that my time was so spent on, like, you know, creating menus, grocery shopping, getting to the people's apartments, all this stuff, that I was basically spending as much time as I was at JP Morgan and not being able to focus like on what I wanted to do.
Right.
And making way less money. So I took a step back and assessed and was like, okay, I actually had made money those 6 months. So
from meal prepping.
Yeah.
Got it.
Not like a JP Morgan salary, but money. Right. And that's honestly, I think, when I was really anxious, because there's so many things I get anxious over. I'm a bit of a control freak.
Okay.
And so when I give up some, when things are out of my control, I get a little anxious. And it was like, is the Instacart person going to show up on the early side of that 2 hour window with all the right ingredients so I can prep the person and get out to the next prep on time to get to the third prep? It was just so many moving parts.
Yeah.
And I struggle with that when I'm not the one moving them.
Mm-hmm.
And so then in January of 2019 is when I was like, I'm going to focus solely on content creation. So I'm going to focus on my Instagram, on my blog. I started a YouTube page and at the time I had been listening to podcasts a lot and was like, yeah, that'd be fucking awesome. And clearly I don't shut up. So
I actually started listening to podcasts when I had a concussion.
Really?
That's like all I could do.
It's all we could do. Exactly.
Yeah.
So then I started a podcast. So that's where I am now in a very, what I promised was going to be a short story. It was not.
No, that we want to hear.
Yeah,
all
it was good and informed a lot of people kind of your background. And like, I don't know, what I really like about your story is that if you kind of look at it from a distance, you're right. It seems it's a privilege to take a risk because you had like a very nice job. And so you were able to save up and take this risk. Like, but
from what I came from. And I think a lot of people love to ask questions about like my financials on my Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, I came from a family with money and I never had student debt. So that I was able to save money.
Right.
Not only did I have a good paying salary, but I didn't have to then pay off things that I owed from a past time of my life.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So much privilege goes into that. But yes, taking risks is a privilege.
Right. And but recently you also started to talk about how you're just still anxious, like even though you changed your life circumstances to be different, it didn't necessarily like change what was going on internally. Mm-hmm. So can you kind of talk a little bit, you've talked a little already, but about like what anxiety might come with mm-hmm. being your own boss
and
how you deal with it?
Yeah.
Like, I'm really interested to hear this just because I am one of those people that thinks, oh, you work for yourself. Like, you know, there's anxieties. That must be so nice. Like, you don't have to like, you know, explain to someone if you're having a sick, if you're not feeling so well, mm-hmm. that you don't want to go in. Like, it just, to me, it sounds like a dream world.
Oh my God, same. I was like, I won't have any anxiety. I will be the happiest person in the world when I leave this
office.
That's
like what I think.
Yeah. Me too. So when I left my job, I definitely was the type of person. I mean, I think everyone thinks that. Like, if you work for yourself, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So I left being like, this is going to be the best time of my life. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God, I'm free. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
And it has been amazing. The pros totally outweigh the cons. And I'm very happy with the decision I made. But it has been so fucking hard. And I really try to show that on my Instagram. I think it kind of gets brushed under the rug because, you know, I get to do all these other amazing things. And totally. People are like, yeah, who cares? But it's really hard. I think there's so many pieces of the puzzle that go into it. One, it's lonely as hell. Like, I came from a very team-oriented job. Mm-hmm. And I think we all take for granted having people to bounce ideas off of. Just actually sitting physically with other humans during the day. Like, when I work from home, it's me. Hence why I got a dog. And, you know, then Joe gets home from work and I'm bouncing off the walls. Like, let's go do something. Right. He's like, what?
I'm so tired.
All day. Yeah. I just want to sit on the couch and like watch a movie. And so there's that. But I think the anxiety more comes from, what the hell am I doing?
Yeah.
A lot in the beginning was, you know, everyone loves to ask, oh, what do you do? And I didn't have an answer. And Joe actually caught me. I was saying, oh, I used to work in sales and trading at JP Morgan, but now I'm doing this. And Joe's like, stop downplaying what you're doing.
Right.
Just say what you're doing.
Because you felt like you needed the JP Morgan part to. Yeah.
I had to prove to them that I don't know if it was like intelligent or whatever, mm-hmm. but, you know, I think it also depends on the generation of the person you're speaking to. People our age totally get it. My mom's friends, they get it. If they follow me, they know. But a lot of them are like, huh, what? Don't even get me started on my grandma's age. Like, right. But that has been anxiety inducing and really just like I fear the unknown a lot.
Same.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The worst.
So terrifying.
So terrifying. And I'll actually speak just on that for a second. I had the incredible honor of being a part of this course in college called Woman in the Criminal Justice System. Mm. And it was seven of us. And we went into the local prison in Easton, Pennsylvania. I went to Lafayette. And it's this woman, Dr. Bonnie, who is a teacher at Lafayette. And she teaches a class in the prison, like in their not common area, but there's kind of like a classroom off the common area. It's the minor security for females. And we are students alongside the inmates.
Wow.
So they're never called inmates, actually. They're called inside students and we're called outside students.
Okay.
And so we would sit in a circle with them in chairs, like as if, you know, they were our peers. Mm-hmm. And we would read books about the criminal justice system and talk about it. And it was such an eye-opening experience in so many ways and truly the most incredible academic experience I've had. But I wrote my end paper on the fear of the unknown because the last class we're all sitting in a circle and this was senior spring. So I'm about to graduate and I had so much going on in my life. Joe and I were not together and I was so distraught over the fact that my lacrosse career had ended and I didn't know what life was like without being an athlete and I couldn't imagine going to work every day. And so that was the impeding unknown and fear for me. It's the last class and we're sitting and it basically was like therapy session, these classes. These women were truly amazing. And the one woman next to me starts crying because she is new, a new inside student, inmate. And she's like, I don't fucking know what my life looks like in jail. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to handle this. I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm crying because she's like, oh my God, I'm in jail. Mm-hmm. I'm like, privileged girl. Oh my God, I get to go work at JP Morgan and move into New York apartment, right. But I'm still, it doesn't matter. I'm still feared.
Yeah.
Fearing the unknown. No matter what the circumstances are, my emotions are worthy. And the girl next to me, or the woman next to me, is getting released next week. And she's like, I don't know if my family will love me. I don't know what's happening with my children. And it was just so eye opening that the three of us could be in such different aspects of our lives and all have that same fear of the unknown. Mm-hmm. And so that was really, for me, eye-opening in my anxiety journey because it put a lot of things, in perspective, but it made me realize that we're not alone in this. And so I think with that, being your own boss, that for me is really hard because I have no idea what the next month holds for me. I mean, people ask me what I'm doing in 5 years and I want to laugh in their face. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what March 2020 means.
Right.
Right.
Financially, that's so overwhelming. I'm extremely fortunate to have a husband who has a stable job. And it's that. It's the feeling of always, I put a lot of pressure on myself. I always feel I need to be doing more, no matter how great people might think I'm doing or like, amazing and encouraging messages I get, which are so, I love them. It makes my heart so full, but I'm really hard on myself. And I'm like, you're not doing a good enough job. This is not good enough. You need to be doing more of this. Like, even today, I'm sitting watching TikTok. I'm like watching it, hating it, but still obviously watching. And then thinking,
yes,
if this is the future, I'm getting hard on myself of like, you don't have a TikTok yet? Like, Cammy, what are you doing? Right. If you want to be in social media, like, you know, Gary Vee is like, this is the next thing. Yeah. You got to jump on it.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly beating myself up about it, which is so stupid. Like, whatever.
Right.
My own struggles.
Right. It's tough. I mean, so I joke about this all the time, but like with people who like with millennials and, you know, like, okay, boomer, like with millennials and older, it's kind of like TikTok was really a Gen Z thing.
Yeah.
And like blew up in high schools and like they're making jokes about what it's like to be in high school right now.
Yeah.
So that's why I feel like our generation is kind of like late to the game.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
We're kind of like, what's this thing that Gen Z is doing? And but yeah, I hear you.
I actually think what you're talking about, like with TikTok and the generational disparity is like, it's hard because social media as a job is like, people think it's so glamorous because you get to like post what you're doing on Instagram, but it's like you have no idea. Sorry if this like is triggering, but like you kind of just have no idea where money is going to come from, what the platform will look like, if you should adopt new things,
what resonates with your audience, how to grow your audience. And so getting back to that, it's, you know, all of those things. And then it's also like, it's a lot to let, you know, my business is so focused on me.
Yes.
And that's a lot. It's a fucking lot. You know, I don't care about necessarily what I look like when I'm like uploading stories. I'm very fortunate that that doesn't bother me.
Right.
I have my own body image issues in my own life, less on like my Instagram life, if that makes sense. But it's really hard to always, I'm an open book, but at the same time, it's like I'm always on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I am always sharing. I'm letting people into extremely personal times of my life.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it for the purpose of hopefully helping others and making these topics approachable. But at the same time, you know, I'm not getting paid necessarily to do that. And I think people take all of this for granted because everything on social media is usually free and it's so accessible that you're like, well, do this, do that. Like, I want to know this. I'm like, okay, I want to do all these things too, but like, I'm not a robot. A lot goes into every single thing that's put on here.
Right.
And I think that's taken for granted a lot. And so, you know, just the act of constantly thinking about myself and what I'm doing on my account is anxiety inducing. You know, I think people take for granted working for the man, quote unquote, sure, like it gets a bad rep, but hopefully you're getting a paycheck.
Stability.
Yeah.
You're getting health insurance. You're getting paid time off.
Right.
Right.
You get to close your phone and your computer at a certain hour and like breathe.
Yeah.
Right. I need to be able to get to a point where I do that. But I don't. You know, I'm always, I talk about this with my therapist. I feel like, and I think I don't want to project my emotions onto a different type of person because it's a very well respected in my mind and I never want to act like I feel the same way as them, but like working mothers, I hear that they oftentimes feel a lot of guilt because they're never, I'm like nervous because I'm not trying to put words in their mouths, but my mom, for instance, has said, I felt like I wasn't doing a good enough job at my job and I wasn't doing a good enough job as a mother. I was constantly guilty because I wasn't doing a good job at either one. I was just average. And that's kind of how I feel right now about my life where I'm like, I'm always on, quote unquote, for work and I'm always accessible for my friends and family and loved ones, but I'm never fully there for either because I'm in this weird limbo of being on for both at the same time. So I'm currently working on like setting boundaries on both ends. But that, I mean, it really is very difficult. And I don't think we give entrepreneurs, but especially entrepreneurs in the social media space, totally. Enough credit. It's so much fucking work. Right.
Yeah.
And it is, I've never worked so hard for a dollar in my damn life.
Right. It makes you appreciate every dollar that comes
in.
Oh
my
right?
God.
Yes.
Like you the things I like, get excited over, yeah. I'm like, if someone had handed me this, like, or like added on X amount to my payroll yeah. last time, I wouldn't have probably even noticed.
Right. Yeah. Right.
The last thing I do want to ask yeah. you about was, when you were talking about this career change and how it makes you mm-hmm. anxious, you were also saying like planning to have kids, and not oh, everyone yeah. in oh, our audience is women, but a lot of them are. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the anxiety that, you know, a lot of women have with their career, especially in the new space of careers, mm-hmm. which is like, you know, individual yeah. entrepreneurship, is like, wait, when am I supposed to have a kid if I want to have a kid?
Yeah, I think about it every day.
Yeah. And so, I do too. And I'm a little younger than you, mm-hmm. but it's like, it's constantly on the top of mind. Like, how yeah. do I map this out? You know, yeah.
I'm just busy here thinking about how I'm going to meet my husband.
Oh,
so
true. Yeah, yeah,
I have
yeah.
different concerns. I
no,
think
but
both
it's
of
the,
you
it's
are
the
like,
same, like mapping out your life in a way that I don't think men necessarily
it's stressful,
do.
For sure. Because we have an internal clock. So
right.
it's stressful.
Yeah, we actually have that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, another thing people take for granted, hopefully you have maternity leave. So and this is twofold for me. So I am so excited to have children. Mm-hmm. We don't want to have kids quite yet. I'm not saying in like 6 years, I would like them sooner than that. But mm-hmm. for me, you know, my mom's always like, when are you going to, I just want grandchildren. And I'm like, do you want to pay maternity leave? Because I have no fucking idea how mm-hmm. I'm going to make money.
Right.
and raise a child.
And just to interrupt you real quick, well, not to interrupt yeah. you, but I'm going to, people also might think that it's like, what do you mean? Like, don't you just like post on social
exactly.
media?
Exactly. Don't
but
you just get to do
it? So
yeah.
not.
So
There's
having
so
my dog
to
has
it.
Totally made me. I mean, the pros outweigh the cons. He's the best thing in the world, but it's made me very fearful. And I've talked about this with my husband and my close friends. Like, I'm so nervous now to be a mother because there's no, like, I feel like I'm ignoring him when I'm working. And I feel like when I'm working, I should be playing with him. And then if I'm playing with him, I'm like, oh my God, I haven't done work at all. And like this past month has been really hard for me because I feel so far behind. I feel like I'm just like swimming in a shitload of things I have to do.
Yeah, I get that.
And so I'm very, very weary and anxious about that moment of my life. Yes, 100%. And then the other fold is health is a big trigger for me. And
yeah.
I have always been someone who said I'm so excited to physically be pregnant. Like my friends make fun of me. They say I crave to actually be pregnant. Like huh. I just can't wait.
Yeah.
I think it's the coolest fucking thing that a body can do. And I cannot wait to do it. And I struggle with hormonal issues. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I was on birth control my entire life. I don't even know what a regular period is. And I like, yeah, got my IUD out a year ago. And I got my period for the first time a year later. So, you know, that's been really, I just was at my doctor and it's kind of like just that fear. Health is yes. an anxiety trigger for me. And of course, I go down the rabbit hole of something's wrong, blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to be able to have a kid. Like such negative energy that right. I then put into the universe, which is not good. So I'm working on that. But yeah, that's something I really struggle with. And I think a lot of people, a lot of females do in this space. And that's definitely not something that's talked about enough. And I think that's why I try to be as open as possible because I want to have the conversations that maybe people feel uncomfortable having in the effort to maybe help one person.
Yeah.
Right. And like that's enough for me. And I don't know if this is something you guys talk about on here, but I always like when we're talking about anxiety to also give like tangible things that have helped me.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We always
we do that too. Yeah.
So I meditate every day, 20 minutes in the morning. I try to get 10 minutes in the afternoon also, but it's been not great for me lately. I went to a school called Ziva Meditation. It's like a three and a half day in-person program in New York City. It is expensive. I know. I did it. I thought it was worth it. They do have an online platform also. But right. also like Calm and Headspace, those apps. Mm-hmm. Joe is now meditating using them and it's been the best gift he's ever given me. So I meditate daily. I write down every morning three things I'm grateful for and three things I'm manifesting. You know, I think just putting good, I try to be as grateful as possible. I think gratitude mm-hmm. is really important and it puts you in perspective. Even implementing things with your friends or significant others, like every night, Joe and I say one thing we're grateful for and one thing we're excited for the next day.
Wow.
So it takes 5 seconds in bed and it's the happiest moment of my day. I cut recently, like I've changed my workouts. I limit my caffeine intake. So, you know, I was doing everything. And I think this is also important because this is something I like to share in mm-hmm. hopes of helping others. I was doing everything possible and I was still peak anxiety about a few months ago. And since my concussion, I'd woken up every single day for a year and 4 months with a headache. And it was a matter of whether it went away, it maintained, or it got worse. And so every day I woke up anxious because for me, again, health is triggering. And I just kept telling myself that my brain isn't healed. I'm broken. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to be back to normal. My life is over. Which is so not true. But again, we tell ourselves these mm-hmm. stories. And so after trying everything and going back to my neurologist, it kind of appeared that my anxiety now after my concussion manifests in headaches, which was never the case. But your body changes and such is life. And so he recommended going on an antidepressant. And it's one that specifically is helpful for post-concussion symptoms with like the neurological receptors. And it also will help with anxiety. And
which one, if you don't mind?
Amitriptyline. And at first I was like, I don't need that. What? Huh? Like, this isn't anxiety. Right. Like, this is concussion. And I broke down outside of the office. And my mom was like, you know, Cam, I know that it's just a very triggering subject for me. Like, yes. I step into that neurologist's office and I'm hysterically crying.
Yeah.
And she's like, I think that you definitely were more stressed. And also part of me is like, you're supposed to be happy now. You quit your job.
Right.
You're doing what you love. Why aren't you happy? Or why do you feel this way? And so she was like, you know, I think you were stressed more at your old job. That's fair. But I do think you're more anxious now because the weight of your world is on your shoulders, quite literally. And so I went on my Instagram and I was like, hey, everyone, my neurologist thinks I should take amitriptyline. Who has taken it? I want to know everything about it. And I received incredible messages. You know, it does go to show that everything is different for everyone. A lot of girls were like, nope, didn't work for me. Hated it. Gained a ton of weight. Couldn't sleep. A lot of people were like, it saved my life. So I have been on it for 2 months. It's the best thing I've ever done for myself.
Wow.
Yeah. Like truly.
Did you feel the effects right away?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
After a few days, I have not had, I mean, I've had headaches when I'm hungover.
Yeah.
Like appropriately. But my level, like I still get anxious over things that make sense. Like, got I don't it. Think that's ever going to go away.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm not walking down the street with grocery bags in my arms, happy as can be, and all of a sudden feel like the world is falling out from underneath me and like I can't breathe and have a panic attack. That has gone, which for me is has changed huge, my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I am a proponent of combining both aspects of the medical worlds, Eastern and Western. I think that, you know, we should all be doing some holistic things to try and help, such as meditating and journaling and gratitude and all that. But there also comes a point where it's a blood thing.
It's a chemical.
It's a chemical. It's, thank you for that word. I'm like, well, not blood. What am I trying to say? It's a chemical thing. Clearly, I'm not a scientist. It's in my genetics. It's just if you had a broken leg, you would use a crutch.
A lot of the things you're saying, Liz and I we feel the same
about,
way.
Yeah.
And we talk about too. Like we... And just like mental health in general, like it's, you know, it's something that you can't always just be like, oh, don't worry about it. Like sometimes you actually have to
actively do something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do like to say that because I know when I opened up about it, I got a lot of messages of like, holy shit, I never told anyone I was on medicine. I've been on it for like a year and none of my friends even know. Like, thank you.
Yeah.
I also got a lot of messages from people that I'm very close with and we're like, oh, I'm on this. And I'm like,
wait,
what?
Yeah.
I thought we were really good friends. How did I not know this?
Yeah.
I mean, now I kind of joke that like everyone is medicated in my life and I just only found out when I got medicated.
Right.
That's sort of how it works.
That's how I felt about therapy. I was like, wait, everyone sees a therapist?
That's the other thing. Best thing ever is my therapist. She is my fucking best friend.
I wonder like, if like our therapists like know each other
and they all like talk.
Yeah,
about
like,
us.
What about Liz?
Patient
what do you think
X.
about
yeah.
her?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I did put together, and for anyone who's listening and is looking for a potential therapist, I did put together a list of, it's mainly New York, but I do have some other cities on there, recommended therapists from people in my community.
Wow.
So I have not personally vetted them. I actually have vetted one on there, and I loved her, but I saw her for like post traumatic symptoms from my accident, and then after that I was kind of like in my mind labeled her personally as that,
right?
And so I wanted like a general
right
thing.
right
And she was amazing. But I have a list on there. And so I've gotten a lot of messages from people of like, you know, I saw someone on that list and I've been with them for X amount of months, years, whatever. And I, not years, because I haven't had it up there for that long. But that has been so rewarding for me, just knowing that I'm helping one person.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do know, like, some people have asked me for my specific therapist name and I don't fully feel comfortable sharing her.
Yeah, that's very personal. Yeah.
It's personal. And you have a decent enough audience where it's just like...
It's, yeah, I'm keeping that separate. I gave it to one person, but my therapist was very like, you know, she knows. And so she like purposely schedules us so that we're not going in and out at the same time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I do think therapy is something that, I mean, if... there was one thing I could grant everyone in this world, it would be free therapy.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm with that too.
What I really wish is that everyone, prison and jail, had therapy.
Don't even get me started.
That's like, would be a dream.
The system is so corrupt and it has so, 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 so far to go. And that's something that leaving that class that I took was just, what the hell are we doing in there?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And the levels of like talking about mental health are so different. And I think you talked a lot about privilege and like being able to sit and talk about mental health as much as it is real. And we do talk about this. Like, it's hard for us to talk about it sometimes because we're like, it seems like our problems are small compared to others. But at the same, like, relative. there's this twofold part of talking about mental health, which is like, okay, on the one hand, yes, I am privileged and it's good to acknowledge because there are people who don't have access to mental health care. But then on the other hand, it's like, but that doesn't make my feelings less valid for what they are.
And I've gotten a lot of, you know, I've gotten some mean messages of like, oh, what could you possibly be anxious about? Like, blah, 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 blah. Like, you're so privileged, you're doing this. And I'm like, yeah, bitch, I know I'm privileged.
Right. That doesn't change anything.
It doesn't change anything. And right. I think if you're approaching the conversation with the fact of like, I think what frustrates people, and after having conversations with a lot of Instagram DM conversations on this, is when people are complaining about certain things that might not be relatable to others without acknowledging the, like, I know this situation might be like, I don't know how to say this, but I always kind of approach a situation being like, I know I have privilege that allows me to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I still feel this way.
Right.
I know the world is not ending because I'm stressed about what to pack to go to fucking Florida for a vacation.
Right.
I know that is not going to end my world, but that doesn't change the fact that I still have anxiety over it.
Yeah.
And so it's really, I think, getting more in tune with the factors and less of the, like, the deep rooted factors.
Right. Like the fear of the unknown.
The unknown.
Yeah.
Less, instead of, what am I going to do if it's cold in Florida and I didn't pack it, you know?
Totally.
You're speaking my brain. Yeah. Now, yeah.
Packing. I fucking hate it.
Yeah.
Okay, control.
It's a control thing.
So we would love to have everyone who's listening check out your page and follow you. So do you want to like kind of promote?
Of course. Yourself. Yeah. Let me plug. Yes. So my Instagram is basically my main platform and where everything kind of lies for you all to access. It's at Freckled Foodie. It is there, like everything's linked, but my website is freckledfoodie.com. Mm-hmm. And then my podcast is Freckled Foodie and Friends, which is kind of like this, conversational based, myself and a guest, different every week. And it's really just trying to, my whole idea and mission is to make healthy living approachable, whether it's mental health, physical health, eating, all of that. You know, we don't need the 20,000 different ashwagandha whatever in our lattes every morning but I do love acupuncture and I'll tell you why, you know. Right. So it's, I hate to say dumbing down, but it's making topics approachable in a very honest and open manner.
Great.
Lovely.
Thanks.
Per usual, you can follow us at It's Fine I'm Fine Pod. You can follow me at Liz Height, LizHeit.
You can follow me at Sarah L. Sassone. That's N like Nancy. I always say that.
I need to follow both of you guys.
Yeah, please do. And thank you so much for being
here. Oh my God. Thank you so much for having me.
And you're very inspiring, even though it might feel like hard. You've had your anxious moments. You make me want to like go out there and do more.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.